Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the PAION AG conference call hosted by Dr. Jim Phillips and Abdelghany Omari. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero and you will be connected with an operator. I am now handing you over to Ralph Penner to begin today's conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everybody is well, and thank you for joining us for PAION's earnings call on the financial results of 2019. My name is Ralph Penner. I'm PAION's Vice President, Investor Relations, and I'll be moderating today's call. I'm joined by Jim Phillips, PAION CEO, as well as Abdelghany Omari, our Chief Financial Officer. Within the next half hour, we are going to highlight some of the 2019 achievements, give details on the financial results, highlight the most important events, and provide a pipeline and strategy update and a financial outlook. After this initial presentation, we'll be happy to take your questions. I would like to point out that the slides for the presentation can be accessed by webcast in parallel to this conference call. The webcast details have been posted on our website and were also given in today's press release. If you have not already opened the webcast link, you may want to do so now. This conference call is being recorded and a replay will be available later today and will be posted on our website. Before we get started, I would like to remind that today's call may include forward-looking statements and that actual results may vary from PAION's current anticipation. I would also like to refer to the disclaimer included in the presentation slides. After this initial remarks, I believe that we should now start right on with the presentation. Jim, please go ahead.
Good afternoon or good morning if you're outside of Europe. To everyone. My name is Jim Phillips, and I joined PAION in October as the new Chief Executive Officer with a really to put into place the strategy to grow revenue, become a revenue-based business, and commercialize remimazolam through our partners and in certain territories, potentially on our own. So we'll take you through the corporate update and then the financials and come back to kind of some of our thoughts and plans for the next year. Next slide, please. So just to remind you, we're an emerging specialty pharmaceutical company and our focus is anesthesia, our first core product, and critical care. So these are products used around the operating theater and intensive care settings. Remimazolam is our lead candidate. It has its first approval post the end of last year in Japan, and further marketing authorizations are underway across the world. We have commercial partners already in the US, China, South Korea, across Asia, Canada, Russia, and the old Commonwealth of Independent States, also across Turkey, Middle East, North Africa, Japan. So pretty much apart from Europe and South America and Australia, the world's commercialization purposes are covered through our partners. Most importantly, I think given the coronavirus situation and the impact on capital markets, our current cash at the end of last year was 18.8 million euro. That was more than it was at the end of 2018. And we're looking at a year in which we have access to a lot of cash, as you will see in terms of projected revenues, the European Investment Bank loan facility, and our current cash, which means that we have no immediate needs to look to the markets and the capital markets to raise money. So we are very well capitalized. We have access to the cash that we need for 3 years or even more if we need to. Supervisory board, no changes there in the last months. You know, this board has been in place for some years. Marcus Leek Dayton was our most recent joiner. It's a supervisory board that fulfills all of its obligations with due process. Okay, next slide, please. So our strategy is becoming very clear now, I hope. You know, we're bringing remimazolam as a product to market over the next 2 years, with the first launch we anticipate in Japan in the coming months, then the US, and then other markets. So over the next 2 years, there will be multiple launches of the product. What we also want to do is build our own commercial capability in certain geographies, and we are still working on which of those geographies we're going to take up on our own to build that focus in anesthesia and critical care. But launching one product on its own and building sales forces around that is not necessarily the most cost-effective way to sell a product. So we're also looking at opportunities to bring in other complementary medications to enable us to leverage our sales force and to grow revenue faster. And the ultimate output of that is that we plan to become a profitable business, certainly within the next 5 years, maybe quite a bit sooner than that, and also become a leader in our field with fast revenue growth. Next slide, please, Ralph. Management board, we're all here on this call, so myself and my background, for those who don't know it, originally a physician. I took an MBA in London many years ago, and I hold another non-executive position outside of Pion in Finland with a publicly listed company there called Herantis Pharma. Abdul, who's on the call, has been our CFO for a number of years now, 6 years in fact, and has, you know, done a very good job in steering the company's expenditure over that time. And Jürgen, who is also in on the call and may answer some of the questions at the end, depending on what they are, has been our Chief Development Officer for the last 3 years, but has also been working with the company for longer than that. So that's our management board for you. Next slide, please. In terms of the listing, you know, we've clearly been affected by the current market situation, which is essentially coronavirus-derived stock market falls. If you look at our comparators, we're very much not adversely affected any more than the rest of the market, and particularly the biotech and specialty pharmaceuticals market. Market cap today, actually looking just before the call, we were more like 117-18 million euro. And so I think, you know, my message to investors and analysts is that we think we're very undervalued, particularly in the current market, but also with the cash resources and the access to cash that we have no need to expand our facilities and to go to the market for cash in the coming years. So here we have a company that is, you know, doing well, has enough cash to take it forward through its commercialization process without an immediate need to come to the market in these difficult times. Okay, next slide. So to remind everyone, remimazolam is indicated for potentially three different uses. The first on the slide is our general anesthesia. The second is for procedural sedation, so this is things like colonoscopies and endoscopies in patients. And the third, which is an earlier stage for us, is intensive care use for sedation, which you might think is possibly what's needed today in the current environment with so many people needing respirators. But of course, this is not an approved indication for us anywhere in the world yet. But it certainly demonstrates the need for good new anesthetics in the future. Thank you. Next slide. So what do we see about remimazolam as a drug compared with things that are on the market today? So propofol and midazolam are the two compounds that are used in most instances. And propofol has some negatives. It basically can cause cardiovascular and respiratory depression. There's no way to reverse it, and there is some pain on injection. And with midazolam, the variability around the sedation it causes is a big can be a big problem. There is also a risk of resedation, and it has a relatively slow onset of action. So when you look at remunizolam, the things we see as our benefits so that we have a rapid onset and offset, very predictable recovery time. There should be less need for supervision after procedures. We see lower potential safety issues. We have also a very simple to use reversal agent. So if you need to bring somebody out of sedation or out of anesthesia, it's relatively easy to do. And then during procedures, again, the supervision levels can be less. So therefore, remunizolam represents an opportunity to basically be able to substitute both of these other drugs in a way that brings benefits to the market. Next slide, please. Okay, so next one. So in terms of what we've just described, across safety is a really important thing in anesthetics. And particularly amongst that, as you'll see in the next couple of slides, the avoidance of cardiovascular effects is something that we are looking at remunizolam as potentially helping doctors in treating their patients by, when they're under anesthetic, reducing the incidence of hypertension and improving their hemodynamic stability, which can be very helpful in the morbidity post-operatively or post-procedural. There is also quite a lot of evidence from our phase 3 studies in the US that predictability of overall procedure time and the improved patient throughput by time saving brings efficiency to healthcare providers. And then across patient experience and cost saving, we see the ability for hospitals or clinics to treat more patients because of the on-off effect that's faster, the reduction in resources required, and that patients are back to normal faster. So therefore, it's easier and you get patients through and out of the clinics faster. Okay, next slide, please. So just a reminder again of the compound itself. So it's an intravenously given benzodiazepine-based sedative and anesthetic. The intellectual property, the patents, run through between 2031 and 2033, and we're still working on trying to expand the patent portfolio at present. In terms of safety, there's more than 2,500 patients and volunteers being treated to date, so there's an extensive safety database now. And the indications are in well underway now. So general anesthesia is approved in Japan. Procedural sedation, we hope to get the FDA approval in the next 4 months. We have the potential to take this product through for intensive care unit sedation too, but we have not yet started that work. So there's a large market for these indications. And we're looking to capitalize on that market and the relative lack of innovation in that market over the last 30 years. So what we've seen today is solid efficacy and safety, this rapid onset and offset of action, what seems to be an appropriate depth of sedation, and a good hemodynamic response, which may be a big advantage for us, particularly in general anesthesia. Next slide, please. Next slide. So in the US, which is obviously one of the largest markets, there are more than 20 million procedures per annum in procedural sedation in the area that we're particularly looking at. And that gives a market that is really attractive, both in terms of what we can show for doctors and patients, and in terms of the financial and revenue potential for the US market. Next slide, please. So procedural trials were run in the US, and you can really see here that the dark blue on each of the graphs in each of the studies, essentially showing remimazolam having higher successes in procedures than either placebo, as you'd expect, or midazolam as a comparator. So these studies are very important in that they show that across three different types of procedure and patient groups, that remimazolam increases the output of the clinics in terms of their ability to complete procedures. Next slide, please. In terms of the colonoscopy study in the US, this really talks to the US market, where you can see that two key parameters in terms of time saving in the clinic, where remimazolam had a faster onset and a faster offset of action, reducing the time of the whole procedure by around 22 minutes, which if you think the average endoscopist or colonoscopist is doing roughly 10 a day, then they would, on the aspect of 22 minutes times 10 patients, you're looking at 220 minutes, so potentially 3 to 4 more patients being able to be served a day, which is a big increase in efficiency for those units which are paid by procedure. Okay, next slide. So the US launch plan, the FDA, as I think everyone's aware, extended the PDUFA date, and this was extended to July. Basically what happened was there was some additional data which was asked for and submitted in January and February, and the FDA, particularly in the current environment with this coronavirus epidemic, are taking their time and need to take their time to review that thoroughly. So we do not see any particular negative connotations from this extension, and we are reasonably confident that we are looking at an approvable product over the next few months. No further clinical data has been requested, and everything the FDA has requested has been supplied by us. On the assumption that we get a green light before July or in early July, then we'd anticipate that our partner, Cosmo, and their sublicensee, Acacia Pharma, would be launching the product in the second half of the year. We're working closely with both of them as Acacia undertake their own Salesforce sizing and targeting. You know, clearly there are two core targets in the U.S., the gastro physicians working mainly outside the hospital setting and the anesthesiologists who work in a combination in and outside. Next slide, please. So in Europe, we've also submitted our dossier for procedural sedation in November, post the approval of a pediatric plan that you have to have in Europe. And what we're looking at in Europe is potentially building up our own distribution structure in certain markets, but we need to extend our portfolio. So I'm not really saying that we're going to launch remimazolam alone. We want to be able to launch other products alongside it so that Salesforce is effectively used. We'll also be considering and are looking at options for finding partners and out-licensing remimazolam as an alternative, which may be in certain territories and could be eventually, if we don't find other products, could be through a complete licensing out. So that's work that's ongoing, and of course we'll keep the market updated as to how that develops. Next slide, please. Okay, general anesthesia. Okay. So again, G, I think we talked to most of this slide, but really one of the key things is that many of the population undergoing general anesthesia and surgery today are elderly, and there is increasing evidence that postoperative complications are related to intraoperative hypotension, so low blood pressure. It's a very strong predictor of myocardial necrosis, and, you know, post-surgical mortality, and acute kidney disease, myocardial injury, and other cardiac complications are raised where there is seen to be intraoperative hypotension. So that leads to a 30-day mortality rate that is seen to be higher. So therefore, we see that with remimizolam so far in the studies we've completed that there is a lower incidence of hypotension compared to propofol. And that could be a really significant advantage because that potentially could lead to less of these very serious long-term and short-term consequences of the operative procedure. So there is an opportunity for us and for remimizolam to be a really big improvement in the treatment of patients in under general anesthesia and impacting their patient care and their outcomes. Next slide, please. So just to build on that, myocardial injury, so that's not quite the same as infarction, but it's similar. It's basically any event that can damage the heart muscle. It's often silent. It's particularly around operative surgery. It's relatively common, and it also can be very deadly. So more than 8 million people have silent myocardial injury worldwide. Most of them have no symptoms. There is a 4% mortality at 30 days. And, you know, 8.5% of these have an MI and a cardiac arrest when they die. So it's an important part of thinking about patients holistically before they have surgery, during surgery, and after surgery. Next slide, please. And this slide just points to a very important paper that was published last year about postoperative delirium, and also, you know, one of the unexpected findings in this this study was really that the mortality was lower in a guided group and reduction of hypertension-related myocardial injury was concluded to be something that would save many lives. So there is an increasing body of evidence that hypertension has a very poor outcome predictor in anesthesia, and therefore a product like remimizolam that may be causing less hypotension would be a significant improvement over existing products. Next slide, please. So we have a phase 3 study going on in Europe for general anesthesia. This is now in its second year. It would be reaching its second anniversary in July. Multi-center randomized active control study in around 500 patients. Essentially, coronavirus had an effect on this study. So as of yesterday, we had 424 patients recruited to the study, and essentially, you know, most sites, because of the intensive care needs and the resources that have been diverted to coronavirus, have now stopped recruitment for the time being. Next slide, please. So our plan would be that as the pandemic cools off and hospitals and society returns to normal, we will talk to the regulators and discuss about whether we should and whether we need to and whether the hospitals have the capacity to recruit the rest of the study. We are at a point where, you know, subject to those discussions, we have the potential where we may be able to continue the study or stop the study and still file with the current number of patients for their general anesthesia indication. So that will be the subject of discussions with the regulators over the coming months and as this coronavirus pandemic plays itself out in the world. Okay, next slide, please. So this is just a summary of some of the data that supports our hypothesis that Remimazolam may be a safer product to use regarding the hypertension and myocardial and consequences. So you can see Remimazolam in blue and the comparator propofol in gray, where both around hypotension, the need for vasopressors, which are drugs that increase your blood pressure, you see that Remimazolam has a lower incidence of both hypotension, it's almost half that of propofol, and certainly much reduced need for the drugs that to put the blood pressure back on. So these are post hoc analyses, but this work and our analysis of all the data in all our studies will continue. So we hope we will continue to see this improvement in patients' blood pressure during operative surgery and the beneficial consequences of that that can be attributed to using Remimazolam. Next slide, please. In terms of the European target population in anesthesia, this is restricted to high-risk patients. So there are more than 70 million procedures under general anesthesia. And, you know, the high-risk patients are around 14 million of those patients, and it's that area and the general anesthetic population, as opposed to all anesthesias, that Remimazolam will be focused on. And, you know, the number of high-risk patients seems to be increasing as the population ages and people go into hospital for surgery with more comorbidities alongside the thing that they're in for the surgery for. Next slide, please. Just a little review again of our commercial partners. So all of those blue areas in the world, apart from Europe, which currently is reserved for PAION to commercialize, are partnered. So you see the gaps are essentially South America, South and Central America, Australasia, certain parts of the Indian subcontinent, and Africa. We are working on Latin America, Central America, Australasia, and those are our focuses in terms of potential new partnerships going forward. Next slide, please. So just to remind you of some of the core partners at the moment. So Japan, we have Mundi Pharma, MKK, where the product was approved in January. Currently, there are discussions with the authorities over pricing, and we would hope to see a launch there in the middle of the year, certainly in late Q2 to Q3 would be the time frame, and that's coronavirus permitting. At the moment, most pharmaceutical companies do not have sales reps out selling products for obvious reasons. So that would be a proviso around any launch over the next 6 months, which is somewhat dependent on the coronavirus situation. To the right, South Korea and Southeast Asia, Hanapharm. So they are filed in South Korea for general anesthesia. Hanapharm also extended their license territory by adding Southeast Asia earlier this year, so that's a very positive development for us. And they're looking for a market approval in Korea in the second half of the year. In China, Yichang Humanwell have filed for marketing approval a year and a half ago now, and they're looking for an approval. They hope to get it in the middle of the year. So that would be potentially a second or third approval, with the US coming soon as well. Our farm in Russia, Turkey, and the Middle East essentially are preparing for filing, but really what happens there is that they're basing their filings on other approvals. So we're in a position where we're essentially waiting for the filings to take place. Same in Canada, where PharmaScience would use the US dossier as the basis for filing for approval in Canada. Next slide, please. So in terms of the milestones and revenues that are expected, I think that it's fair to say that This last year was a good year in terms of milestone-based revenue, with $7.5 million coming in from Cosmo, and a further $500,000 from R-Pharm. But we expect 2020 to do far better than that. We already have significant income this year from milestone payments. There is a €15 million payment that would come from Cosmo on approval in the US. And essentially, those payments are what are guiding our forecasts for this year. So there are plenty of royalty-based payments and milestones due in 2020. And from 2021, we'll be looking forward more to royalties rather than milestones. So the revenue will become less lumpy, but we hope will be fast growth and more predictable. Next slide, please. So now I'm going to hand to Abdul. He's going to take you through the financials.
Thank you, Jim. Good afternoon, everyone. I will now guide you through the financial key figures for 2019 compared with the previous year and also give a financial outlook for this year. But first of all, I would like to summarize the two financing agreements that we signed in 2019. In June 2019, we signed an agreement with the European Investment Bank for an unsecured loan of up to €20 million. The loan is available until June 2021 and can be drawn in three tranches. For each of the tranches, specific conditions must be met. The first tranche of €5 million is available, but we have not drawn it yet. The second financing agreement is for the issue of unsecured convertible notes with a nominal amount of up to €15 million in up to three tranches. The issue price is 95% of the nominal amount, and the first tranche of €5 million was issued in September 2019 under exclusion of preemptive rights. To date, convertible notes with a nominal amount of €2.9 million have been converted into 1.4 million Pion shares in total. The notes don't have a coupon and are due by the end of this year, but we can extend the maturity by 12 or 24 months against the cash fee if we decide to do so. Finally, we are not planning to issue additional tranches of convertible notes under this agreement. Let me now move to the P&L. Next slide, please. Revenues amounted to €8 million, of which €7.5 million relate to the milestone payment from Cosmo for NDA filing in the US, and €0.5 million relate to the transfer of the Japanese filing dossier to R-Pharm. Revenues of €2.8 million in 2018 were mainly realized in connection with the license agreements for Japan, South Korea, and China. On the upper right-hand side, you can see that research and development expenses amounted to €13.1 million, which is an increase of €0.9 million compared to 2018. The R&D expenses mainly related to the European Phase 3 study in general anesthesia and the validation of commercial scale production. The increase compared to the prior year mainly results from higher expenses for the ongoing Phase 3 study. General administrative and selling expenses amounted to €5 million and increased by €1.6 million compared to the previous year. This results from an increase of both general administrative as well as selling expenses. General admin expenses increased by €0.4 million to €3.4 million, mainly in connection with the two financing agreements that I've just outlined. And selling expenses increased by €1.2 million to €1.6 million. This increase mainly results from pre-commercial activities and work related to the supply chain for remimazolam. In total, a net loss of €7 million was incurred compared to a net loss of €9.9 million in 2018. Now let's move to the balance sheet and an overview of headcount on the next slide. Total assets increased by €0.6 million compared to end of 2018. While the trade receivables are 1 million euros lower than end of 2018, cash and cash equivalents increased by 1.6 million euros compared to end of 2018. As you can see on the upper right-hand side, this increase stems especially from negative cash flows from operating activities of 2.8 million euros on the one hand, and positive cash flows from financing activities of 4.4 million euros on the other hand. Cash flows from financing activities mainly result from the net proceeds of the convertible note that we issued in September 2019. As you can see on the lower left-hand side, equity decreased by 6.1 million euros to 14.7 million euros end of 2019. This change mainly results from the net loss of the year and the conversion of convertible notes into equity. The equity ratio was 59% at the end of 2019. The staff development is illustrated on the lower right-hand side. Compared to an average number of 39 employees in 2018, we had 44 employees on average in 2019. At the end of 2019, we had 45 employees. Finally, I would like to give an outlook for 2020 on the next slide. This year, our focus is on the completion of the ongoing phase 3 study in Europe, market approval processes in the US, Europe, and other regions, the build-up of the supply chain and commercial manufacture of Remimazolam, as well as the market preparation and start of commercialization of Remimazolam in different territories. We expect revenues of approximately 20 million euros, thereof 15 million euros in connection with the expected market approval in the US. Further revenues relate to the market approval in Japan, our license extension with Hanapharm to include additional countries in Southeast Asia, and potential market approvals in further regions. Royalties from commercialization of Remimazolam in the US and Japan are expected in a small amount of less than 1 million euros. Given the ongoing development activities, including the European phase 3 study and the start of the pediatric development, we expect R&D expenses to come in at a range of about 10 to 12 million euros. SG&A expenses will increase to approximately 7 to 9 million euros, mainly because of pre-commercial and supply chain activities for Remimazolam. Due to changed tax legislation in the UK, calculation and capping rules for R&D tax credits have changed. Therefore, and based on the expected revenues in 2020, we only expect tax income from UK tax credits in a minor amount, which is therefore not included in our forecast. In total, we expect the net result in the amount of approximately minus 1 million euros to approximately plus 3 million euros in 2020. Regarding our liquidity, Jim has also pointed out, cash at hand plus the expected milestone and royalty payments secure a cash reach into the second half of 2021 based on current planning. And with this, I hand back to you, Jim.
Thank you. Next slide, please, Ralph. So in 2020, you know, there's a lot of things going to happen for PAION, which we see as positive things. So the completion of the phase 3 study, we still expect to complete this year one way or the other. Commercial launch in Japan is coming, and then the potential market approval in the US from the FDA. We're expecting further filings by licensees and further potential market approvals in China, Europe, and South Korea towards the end of the year. And then, of course, the most important event, single event in the year, would be post an approval in the U.S., the U.S. market launch through Acacia, the commercializing partner there. So there's an awful lot of positive triggers and positive signals that we should be able to bring to your attention over the coming 9 months. And we see 2020 as a really important and pivotal year for the company as we turn from being an R&D focused and spending company into a company that's got real revenue, royalties-based streams of revenue, and has the potential to launch itself through commercial infrastructure in Europe too.
The next slide, please. So I think now we're going to move to the Q&A session. So I hand back to you, Ralph, or am I just holding here?
No, that's fine. Thank you very much, Jim and Abdel, for the presentation. And now, as Jim suggested, I would like to ask the moderator to start the Q&A session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. You will be advised when to ask your question. The first question comes from the line of Simon Scholes, calling from First Berlin. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I have two questions. The first is whether there's any possibility at all that, given the diversion of resources at the FDA to coronavirus, that there could be a further extension of the PDUFA date. And the second one is, I was wondering if you could enlarge on your current thinking on Remy Matsulam and the intensive care unit.
Okay. Thank you for the question. Regarding the FDA and further extensions, I would hope not. We are in effect in the FDA's hands, and I can understand and be very sympathetic to the refocusing of all their efforts towards approving coronavirus tests and potentially vaccine trials, etc. However, the FDA has a divisional structure, and our division is not, I would not think, would be that affected because of the specialized nature of the way in which the FDA operates. I think it would be unlikely, but I wouldn't count it out completely that there could be a further extension because of the coronavirus situation. It also, of course, depends on staff availability and staff who might themselves be affected by the shutdown, self-isolation, etc. So I think the message is we hope not, but the uncertain world in which we live in at the moment means that there is a risk.
Okay, thanks.
Second question around Remy Matsulam and ICU. I think we are doing some work at the moment in the company, and we're doing two things. We're looking at the investment to bring Remy Matsulam through to an approval in ICU, intensive care unit sedation, and the potential returns from that investment and the things that affect that, the investment is relatively clear, but the returns are affected by pricing, uptake, potential uptake, and the time of market exclusivity. So we're still doing that work, and we will be making a decision before the end of this year and informing the market accordingly as to whether we're going to proceed with the indication or not.
Okay, thanks very much.
The next question comes from the line of Christian Eiman, calling from FMR Research. Please go ahead.
Hello, thanks for taking my question. I hope everyone is well. I was have two questions, if I may. So first, regarding the possible EU entry, could you give us a little more estimate on the delay regarding the supply chain and the application in light of the current delay which was caused by the coronavirus? And second of all, can you give us a little more insight, more details on the plans regarding possible add-on products? We talked about this a lot already. So are there any, can you give us more detailed explanations? Thanks.
Okay. I'm going to answer the second one, and then I'll give you part of an answer to the first, and maybe I'll hand to Jürgen Beck just to cover the rest of the first question about the European Union GA study and the EMA situation.
Thanks.
So in terms of add-on products,
you know, we're continuously screening the market. We're not looking to bring in any old low-value product. We're looking at higher-value products which have high growth potential. So these are few and far between. You know, of course, we will inform the market as soon as we have something that is becoming reasonably certain. But let's just say that it's a very active part of my and the business development team's work at currently. In terms of your first question about the European study and the EMA delay, I will hand this to Jürgen in a second, but, you know, just from my perspective, I think it is reasonable that if we get the procedural sedation indication approved in Europe at the end of this year, early next year, that we will still be in a position to potentially file around the same time as we intended to for general anesthesia. But let me hand to you, Jürgen. Maybe you want to pick up on that.
Yeah, thank you, Jim, for giving me the opportunity to comment on that question. Yes, in fact, at this point in time, with all the caveat which is necessary in the times of Corona, we believe that there will be no major delays because we think that we have build in enough room for maneuver to keep the timelines we have thought of before the coronavirus spread out. Also, as Jim has mentioned before, we might come to a conclusion with regulators that what we already have in the phase 3 study might be sufficient, and then there would be no foreseeable risk that we would not go in with GA as planned. However, it is very hard to make predictions, anticipation in these days. So I want to ask you for your understanding that that is just the guess of the moment, which might change if the coronavirus crisis deepens and more restrictions are put in place, and if, for example, also the healthcare authorities, the EMA and the national authorities which work with the EMA, are hit by the disease itself and don't have their normal efficiency.
Of course, it's very difficult in these times to give accurate predictions.
As a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypads. The next question comes from the line of John Savin calling from Edison. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you. I just wonder if you could clarify how many sites you have on the GA trial. It's can't seem to find that figure anywhere.
Jürgen, would you like to answer that?
Yes, that were 21 before the corona crisis. Currently, we have 16 who have told us that they don't see themselves in a position to recruit anymore. So the overall number is 21.
So it was 21, it's gone down to... down to five, is that right?
Five, that is right, yes.
Yes, okay. I had a couple of small follow-ups. You're expecting now the CHMP to make a recommendation in 2021, is that right? Or would that be would you expect a recommendation this year and a commission sign-off in 21? Or are you not clear either way yet?
Jürgen, do you want to take that?
Yeah. What do you call a recommendation? Your recommendation of with regard to what's going to happen with the 22 studies?
Well, we have a recommendation from the EMA that the commission should approve it, and then the commission will issue the formal approval, is it 67 days later?
So you are talking about the approval of general anesthesia.
Yes. Well, the PS, wouldn't it be? PS.
Of PS. Yes, yes. We would expect that in either in the late months of this year or very early in the first quarter next year.
That would be the CHMP opinion in that time period. Okay. And how long do you think the GA abbreviated application will take with the EMA?
Well, that is usually about 6 to 9 months.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
We have no further questions, so I'll now hand you back to Ralph Penner. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much, everybody, for asking your questions and for joining us for PAION's earnings call on the financial results of 2019. I hope that we have been able to answer your questions, but, of course, please feel free to give me a call afterwards. If you would like to listen to this call again, please visit our website where the replay MP3 will be posted later today. For now, I say goodbye. Thank you very much for your continued interest in PAION, and most important, stay healthy. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your lines. Hosts, please stay connected.